The pretrial was in mid-October, so now we're into mid-November. Now you're pushing for trial. When does the trial finally happen, Mario?
The trial started on the end of January, so I think it was the 26th, 27th, and okay. closed on the February 3rd of 2023.
So fairly quick then, yeah. Tell us how things went. You weren't even allowed in the courtroom, is that right?
No, so I've never been in that building before. I mean, I've lived in Woodstock my entire life. I'm going to be 57 pretty soon, and I've never really been in the courtroom except to pay a few parking tickets when everything was in the basement of the of the court building. So I've never been in there, but no, I was not allowed to be in the courtroom as I was due to give testimony.
Right.
So the way it works is the prosecution goes first, and the prosecution witnesses were the detective and the forensic expert from the Woodstock police, who was the expert witness. And then on our side, it was our forensic person and myself. So I'm outside in the hallway
pacing
for
the hall.
2 days,
yep.
pacing up and down, up and down. So basically what happened in court, again, according to, and I've read the trial transcripts probably more than anybody, is within a trial, there's a mini trial. It's called the voir dire.
Yes, and, I've learned about this too now.
Yeah. Again, I didn't know any of this stuff a year ago.
Yeah.
That is the part of the trial where the judge has to satisfy themselves if the expert witness of the prosecution, and this being the forensics person from the Woodstock police, is qualified in giving expert testimony in this case. So the judge ruled and took 6 days for him to come up with that ruling after the prosecution testified that the expert witness is not qualified in this case.
Okay. And what was that based on?
A bunch of stuff. So basically, and I'm just going to kind of read off the, sure. the voir dire here. The judge said that, you know, this expert witness, a forensic person, he may provide opinion, but he's not satisfied that he is qualified to provide more detailed analysis or interpretation of that data. That exceeds what I find to be the limits of his knowledge and experience. So this case, because it involved mobile forensics,
yep.
the judge didn't feel that this person was qualified because it came to be, we found out through the trial that the first time he ever used the software for a mobile application was in this case.
Oh.
So, and he wasn't certified on the analysis or interpretation of that data. So this is where the qualification stuff came up that I'm reading about. And the other part of being an expert witness is that expert has to be impartial and unbiased. So in other words, bring me the stuff, I'll analyze it, here's my findings, and then I run with it, and then I can provide, I have to be impartial and unbiased to the actual investigation, but I can provide my expert knowledge in the trial.
Yeah.
So the judge found that that not only is there a potential for bias, but it has also been demonstrated as well. I take into account that this person has never testified in court in any capacity. It does not appear that any of the courses he has taken include lectures on providing expert evidence. Hmm. So again, I wasn't in the courtroom, but reading this just, that was a punch in the gut in so many ways, thinking like, how did we get this far?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what the voir dire shows. I mean, other things were the judge was saying that he left me with the impression that he saw himself as a team player and that he has concerns that biases may inevitably creep into his analysis.
Yeah, and the team player reference, because I've also read the court transcripts and the voir dire, dates to internal emails that were sent talking about an article or a CTV news story about flaws within the iPhone operating system or the Apple operating system.
Yeah, yeah. So what came up through his trial as well, too, is well, prior to trial being commencing was once we knew we were going through trial, our lawyer requested from the Crown all emails involving the Woodstock police in this case, in particular okay. emails that came from the expert witness and from the detective, and she asked for them all. So what came up in trial was that in August of 2022, the forensic person unpromptedly sent out an email to the detectives at the Woodstock police, and I believe a staff sergeant, about a CTV news article that discusses a security flaw with iPhones, which, and that's a phone that my son uses, and it can lead to phones being hacked completely under the nose of the user. So he sends this article out to these detectives and basically saying, this is not for us to unprove, but just kind of read up on this and shore up your case, because it's probably going to be used by the defense in court. Well, the judge, and I'm not, again, just reading off the voir dire, but this is not being impartial. And what really hurt my family and my son is that when we heard of this in court, is instead of understanding that, here's a young man who came in and says, I didn't do this. I was hacked. I got some evidence. I have no criminal history. This surfaces. And instead of saying, as our lawyer asked him during cross-examination, didn't it make you think to go back into the investigation and reevaluate in case maybe you missed something? Because you could potentially be sending an innocent person to jail.
Mm-hmm.
And his response was no. So they used this more for their own purpose for shoring up their case versus potentially reinvestigating, because that's what police do, to see if there could be something else explaining all this.
Right.
That hurt.
Yeah, that's certainly a big part of how this this whole case came to a conclusion here. So the voir dire, as we mentioned, is kind of a trial inside a trial, which tests mostly expert witnesses. And in this case, the judge came back with a ruling. I think you said it was, what, 6 days later?
Yeah.
And how did this, after he made that ruling that he wasn't an expert witness and it probably showed bias as well, how does this thing go from there?
So basically the judge puts it to the Crown saying you can continue with this trial, but you cannot use this person as an expert witness. You can use his testimony, but it's not considered expert testimony. So it'd be like testimony coming from you or I, for example.
Yep.
Or you can move for acquittal on the remaining two charges. The distribution charge was dropped immediately at the onset of the trial.
Okay.
So it was just possession and access. And the Crown moved for acquittal on the remaining two charges. So, and it just stopped.
That was the ruling. It was done.
It was done.
So your son is acquitted, and it puts this to bed. Before and because this ended at voir dire portion, you don't even have to have the defense come forward with any sort of evidence.
No, so all the evidence that I've just explained to you about the thumbnail generation, the remote synchronization, the only time that was heard in court was under cross-examination of the prosecution witnesses. Had the judge ruled this person as qualified, or had the Crown decided to continue to proceed?
Yep.
Then we would have spoke.
You would have put all that forward.
Yeah, and I'll be honest. I mean, the expense of all this has been huge. We kind of wanted it to go that way, because that way, all of the evidence, our evidence, would have been heard. It would have been in the trial transcripts, because no media would speak with me, and I don't think Hard FM would either, unless I had trial transcripts. So we wanted everything in there. That way, everything we knew. No.
Yeah.
Would have been on the documented.
Record. Yeah.
Now, it came up in the trial through cross-examination, but we had other stuff that we could have shared as well too, but just never came up.
Right. Now, the charges have been acquitted, and we're past the formal portion of this. What is the let's circle back. One of the things that we talked about was the two-factor authentication. We talked about how in this case, it was a Snapchat account. Somebody hacks into your Snapchat account. It will sync back to your phone, at least in these images.
Mm-hmm.
How does two-factor authentication help protect against that?
It's an extra level of security. So it exponentially makes it more difficult to have somebody get into your account from another device in particular. So when people need to be using two-factor authentication on everything, all their cell phone apps, anything they do online, you know, banking in particular, either your utility companies. And the second layer of authentication could be your cell phone number, where you get a text message saying, is this you? Here's the code you got to type in.
Yeah, that's a good point. I have that through like my Hydro account and whatnot, where I get that. Not only do I put my password in, it's also, setting a text to make sure.
Yeah, to make sure. And in particular, if the app sees that a different device that's not normally used to seeing is trying to get in.
Oh, that's a good
point. This is really where it protects you. But I you know, when my son set this up back in grade 8, grade 9, this is the primary messaging app of our young people. This mm-hmm. is how they communicate. And when you're just a kid, you just want the damn thing.
Right.
You know,
just want it and I want it to work.
You want it to work.
Think about security.
Yeah, yep. And it worked fine for 5-6 years
yep.
until the doorbell rang. So at the time of the alleged upload, he knew something's kind of weird here. I don't know what the heck is going on. And the phone he was using was in really rough shape. The phone that the thumbnails were found on, the battery wouldn't stay charged. The screen was cracked. So his friend started texting him through SMS saying, I can't find you on Snapchat. He said, I don't know. I'm just locked out. I can't get in. So he said, I just set up a new account. And as a matter of fact, I'm just going to get a new phone. So he got a new phone. And that's the phone the police went to get the day of the search warrant from his place of work. So he set up a new phone, a new Snapchat account, his new phone. But this time he's 6 years older and wiser. So he put on two-factor authentication. And he started using that phone with a new Snapchat account. So when the police had all his devices, they would have had all of his four phones lined up. And you would think, would the detective have asked himself from a common sense point of view? Because they do have to apply common sense assessment at the point of pressing charges. Is we found thumbnails that we don't really, you know, we're not a little bit unsure of, because they also had to email the tech support of the software manufacturer of the software that they're using, the forensic software, for clarification purposes, they say. But we tend to think that there was stuff that they weren't really 100% sure on.
Sure.
But they got to reach out. But there's nothing on the new phone that he was using since August up until the day that he rang the doorbell.
Okay.
You would think, but the detective asked themselves, does this person really exhibit the behavior of somebody who's in the child pornography?
Right.
Because when they press the charges and publish the name and they put restrictions on you as far as what you can and what you can't do, they treated my son as if he was a pedophile. Now, an innocent person at that age, a crucial age, 19 years old, mm-hmm. that has a huge effect.
Yeah.
A huge effect. So as serious as these charges are, and we support and acknowledge that, we feel that a more serious investigation or thorough should have been done. Aside from, you got the cyber tip, you plug in the phone, you found thumbnails, but you maybe should have done a little bit more. Because 2 months after the trial, an article came out about of the financial market being millions of devices were hit with malware and data were stolen. So it was a 4-year investigation with the FBI, and it also involved many police services, and one of them is the Woodstock Police.
Oh.
And in this article, it said that the police recommend people go on to haveibeenpawned.com to see if their email address has been compromised. So if this is a 4-year investigation, this article came out 2 months after our trial ended, well, didn't they know about this haveibeenpawned.com when they were examining my son's phones?
Yeah, and at least have tried it.
Have tried it?
Because,
mm-hmm. I mean, that would kind of point that, well, this kid is telling us something happened. And look, yep. He's been compromised 7 times and pasted once.
Yep.
None of that came up in trial that they did that. If they would have done that, I'm sure it would have been made mention of in the trial transcripts, but that didn't come up. So it begs the question is, did they do a thorough enough job? We don't believe that they did.
Yeah. Next portion to this, and, you know, we're hoping that our listeners don't ever have to deal with a situation like this, but now that you've gone through it, you thought that maybe I should file some sort of a complaint, or what is it called if you go back to the police service, you put a file in that?
Yeah, so
you want essentially you want this reviewed, right?
Yeah, I want it reviewed. We want the police to learn from this. We have never heard anything from them about any of this stuff aside from what they said to the media. It's called the Office of Independent Police Review Director.
Okay.
And that is the mechanism by which the public can launch a complaint against the police. Now, the forms that they have available, and I think it's just one form, it seemed it was more for an incident. You know, something happened with this officer or at this intersection, something happened.
Right.
Our complaint was one of policy.
Yeah.
So it was the form really wasn't too user-friendly for that. I had a box where I had maybe, you know, 1,000, 1,500 characters. I could type what I felt was the complaint. I could have attached more stuff to it, but what I can tell you from telling the story is that it's got a story of many angles, and you lose people. So I basically stuck with the nuts and bolts of it. And then I launched the complaint. When it gets to the Office of Independent Police Review, they can establish at that point whether they're going to send their own investigator to the police service to investigate, or whether someone internal in that police service investigates. And that's what happened here.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So it's basically a police inspector from the Woodstock Police Service investigating one of their own.
One of their own, yeah. An internal investigation, somebody who is on the Woodstock police staff is investigating.
Yeah.
That's their full role with police, correct?
Right. And I guess they have training for this and whatnot. So, you know, and they know the questions asked and whatever. And it was taken very seriously by them, you know, because when it came to me being interviewed by this inspector, you know, before I started, I said, I need to know what you know. Like, did you read the whole trial transcripts and whatnot? And he said, yes, that he did. So that was good.
Okay.
We spoke for about 45 minutes. I didn't necessarily agree with everything that he was saying. But it's cop investigating cop. And my complaint was against the detective and the forensics person. And the investigation seemed to focus primarily on the detective, and it didn't make as much mention of the forensic person, which didn't leave me with a good feeling about the investigation, because this was thrown out in court. Not thrown out in court. Didn't get past voir dire because of that forensics person. So nonetheless, it didn't end up where I wanted. What I know civilly now is that when you're trying to make a claim against the police for negligence, it's really, really hard.
It's tough.
Hard in Ontario.
Yeah.
The threshold that the police have to satisfy for not breaching a standard of care when it comes time to pressing charges, that threshold they have to satisfy is low. So as long as they believe that the probability of a crime being committed is likely, and they may not need as much evidence as we think they need, we being, you know, me, the public, for example, they can press the charges. They still have to maintain that standard of care throughout the investigation, but that threshold is low. But if we wanted to take civil action against them in civil court as a plaintiff, the threshold that we have to meet to be successful is very high. So the likelihood of being successful in court civilly for negligent claims against police in Ontario is unlikely. Now, we're still exploring all options available, but
is yours of the OIPRD, or is that door closed to you now, or can you make some sort of a rebuttal to them to say, hey, we're not satisfied with what we got, we'd like another person to look at?
We could have appealed it, but, you know, my son was going through so much at that time.
Yep.
He had other mountains to climb.
Yeah, fair enough.
And I just felt it's just going to end up in the same place. You know, we're not going to be satisfied with it if they even do anything at all with it, which is what I suspect would have happened.
Okay.
So we'll see what the next steps bring.
You've currently got a Freedom of Information Act sort of request mm-hmm. at the foot of Woodstock Police, I understand?
Yeah. So my son went in after trial, and all he wants through the access information is his own records that the police have on him. He doesn't, of course, doesn't want any of the evidence, doesn't want the phone, none of that stuff. He just wants what their files are on him, his own personal stuff. So we're not getting too far with that right now. So it's gone into appeal stage. This could take, it's already been, I don't know, 9 months.
Yeah.
So it could take maybe another nine months. This is for his own stuff. So, you know, when you have, we've launched a complaint in the OIPRD and we're not satisfied as to its results, so be it. He's launched the Freedom of Information request, and it's taking forever. Civilly in court, I've already explained that it's very, very difficult, to sue the police.
Yeah.
So from my side is, how are we to know that the service, as a taxpayer and as a father, the service that we're paying for in policing in Woodstock, that we're getting good service? I'm not talking as a whole. I know as a whole we probably are. From this particular situation, which is investigative, and what came up and surfaced in trial, which was not good, how do we know we're getting good service when the complaints go nowhere, the freedom of information is stalled, and it's almost being used as if it's a the Privacy Act is being used as a shield to hide mm-hmm. behind, which that's not the purpose of it. It's there to be transparent right. when called for. Makes me feel like they can act with impunity. How are we supposed to know? So I'll give you an example. If you go to build a house, it's the biggest financial purchase you're going to make in your life, most likely, for the most of us. And it takes 5-6 months to build a house. And you borrow every nickel you're ever going to make. And you give it to a builder. And then you show up on the day of closing. And, you know, the little bit of creaking in the floors. And you notice the material that he used wasn't the best quality, and the corners aren't quite square, and the fit and finish is a little bit off, but the home meets building code.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you going to be satisfied with that? I mean, you're paying for more than just the building code. Why yeah. feel the same way when it comes to this investigation?
Yeah.
I think I'm paying more than just what they did. They should have done more. And the whole point of all of this is just to say that it should have never have gotten this far. Because if this happens to another innocent person, God forbid, and that person doesn't have the resources to get proper representation, this may not end well for them. And it's quite possible, as legal analysts from other medias have told us, our civil lawyers have told us, that if an innocent person who's so scared and doesn't have the right representation accepts a plea bargain to lesser charges, but is still doing they could still be maybe doing jail time. Because yeah. my son, he'd be in jail right now for something that he didn't do.
You're certain of these three charges? If he had been convicted, he would have been in jail?
I can't say that I'm certain, but everything that I've learned
certainly points to
pointed that direction. I don't know what else it would have been. I mean, these are serious offenses. These are serious indictable offenses.
Yeah. No, and it's a good point that you bring up, because I was going to ask about, you know, that aspect of it. If you've got a lawyer that's appointed to you, if you don't have any means whatsoever, who knows how this ends? I don't even know what a lawyer like that would look like, because these are very serious charges, right? Yeah. And there's a lot of computer and technology information that you kind of need to dig into. And mm-hmm. if you don't have a lawyer that can help you with that, they're certainly not going to be able to find money to find a forensic expert to help dig into this for you. So
find
yourself in a very tough boat. Yep. Overall, Mario, we kind of wrap this up. This has been a very stressful time for your family. You know, you've become kind of an advocate for trying to help people that are in this situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the whole point of being here, is just to kind of share what we've learned.
Yeah.
5 weeks after the name was published, my son, he doesn't do any drugs. He rarely drinks. He really takes care of himself. He had a really bad seizure. I almost lost him in my arms. It was that bad.
Wow.
He spent a week in hospital, between two hospitals, 4 days were in ICU, and he was coma-like, so we didn't know if he was going to make it. And then he came out of it, and we thank God for that.
Yeah,
you know, the stress was certainly led to other things. He got just really, really sick. Mm. He's doing well now, thankfully, but that's what it put us under. I mean, he lost his work. He lost his he had to stop with his college studies, and financially. I mean, it was this. This is a lot of money. And when people hear the story, some of them think, well, you can probably get at least the money you spent for your legal costs. No.
You don't recoup anything.
Nothing. You have to sue for this. Mm. You have to sue for it.
Yeah, if you're going to get anything back, you would have to sue.
Sue for it.
The only people you could sue would be either the Woodstock Police or the Crown. And I don't even know if you can sue the Crown, can you?
No. The Crown is basically protected by statute law.
Mm-hmm.
And it'd really be suing the city of Woodstock.
Yeah, when it comes right down to it, because the police are the city.
Yeah.
They're run by the city. That's right.
You know, and this is our hometown. I've lived here my entire life. My kids were born in the same hospital I was born at. They went to the same schools I went to. They played in the same playgrounds that I went to. And as a matter of fact, it's the same on the same playground equipment at Van Sittert Park. Like, we love Woodstock. We live here. They want to continue to have the life that we had, you know, and raise their families here, they be blessed with kids and whatnot. But I can tell you from walking up and down the courthouse during that trial, and it was just me, because it's a very secure building.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a lot of time to think, and your whole son's future is at stake. And I'm thinking, back in 1985, I graduated from WCI. I was 19 years old. That's the same time, same age as my son was when he was charged. And I kept thinking, what would the police have needed then to have charged me with the same offense as they just charged him? At a time when there were no household computers, no internet, no cell phones, what evidence or investigation would they have had to have done then to have charged me with those very crimes?
Yeah.
And it just should have never gotten this far. And we really want to protect somebody who's innocent, who doesn't have the resources, so it doesn't get this far for them.
Very powerful devices that we hold in our hands. Two-factor authentication with all your apps. And Have I Been Pawned is another place to help you out to, you know, hopefully will keep you safe from any sort of situation like
that. Strong passwords.
Yeah, that's a good point as well.
Which is, you know, as you get older, you don't remember stuff as much.
Yeah.
So you use a password manager, that helps you. One other thing I just wanted to say is once this aired, I was reached out to by a mom in the U.S., in the Deep South.
Oh, right, yeah.
And horrible situation. But it's the same thing. Cyber tip, Snapchat, thumbnails. And our systems are different.
Mm-hmm.
Glad we live in Canada. They didn't have any money to afford a lawyer of any kind. They were given a state-appointed lawyer. And the way she told me is that, you know, this boy has no criminal history. And he was so scared that he accepted a plea bargain.
Okay.
So they couldn't pay the $50,000 bond to get him out on bail. So he spent a year in county jail, but that year is up. And now he's been transferred to a federal penitentiary for 25 years.
Wow, for pleading to a lesser charge, is what you're saying? Is that right, eh? Wow.
So, you know, this stuff is out there. You got to really, really protect yourself.
Yeah, be careful.
And you have to be very wise of how to defend yourself. And unfortunately, it costs money.
Yeah, and a lot of money. Mario, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. I know it's not necessarily an easy one to tell, and it's certainly a difficult one to go through. Just in closing, anything else you'd like to pass along to the audience?
One thing, a quote from Mark Twain. You know, and it just stuck with me. It ain't what you don't know that gets you into trouble. It's what you know for sure that just ain't so.
Interesting. Wow.
Thank you, Dana. Thanks to Heart FM for listening to me.
And thanks again for coming in and telling us your story. That's Mario Spina.